Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin Schiller. Griffin, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty great. It's so weird. It was just like I just got off a call talking with Dan Stevens about like Eurovision and whatnot, and immediately jumped on into here. So it's just like I've been going for a solid 30 minutes already, and I'm ready to keep going on camera. Lights beaming down on me, sweating profusely. Let's talk about more movies.
Right. So we originally had this set for 15 minutes ago. I had to do a 30-minute delay, and then you hopped on, so then it only a 15-minute delay. Yeah. So if you're wondering, where was he off? Why was he not with us right at the intro point? Talking to a little Dan Stevens right now. So just a little something like that. We got a pretty great show for today. I'll tell you, right, tease this right up front. Griffin has an actual inside scoop on a very big story related to The Flash. So there's the news that broke a few days ago that we're going to discuss up front. And then in about 20 minutes, Griffin's going to give us some inside stuff. Yes, I don't have sources. I'm in Central Texas. I walk my kids to school, do simple things like that. He talks with Dan Stevens, Jason Isaacs, Kenneth Branagh, and he has sources with inside scoops. So he's going to give us one of those inside scoops in about 20 minutes. And it's... This is a cool story. If this actually, this is cool. You're going to want to wait for that one. But anyway, before that, we're going to talk about this announcement of Michael Keaton, apparently in talks to appear in Flash, and that it's going to be Flashpoint. Grace Randolph is saying that she's got two sources saying that Ryan Reynolds is in talks to do a cameo in Zack Snyder's version of Justice League as Green Lantern. I'm going to talk about Joel Schumacher and his legacy just a little bit. Cobra Kai is officially headed to Netflix with that third season as well. And then we've got an update on the latest M. Night Shyamalan movie that is coming out next year. So, yeah, we're 19 episodes into this podcast. Of the main episodes, actually more than 20 episodes if you count all the little side extra bonus episodes
we've done. Yeah.
But, yeah, we're no longer new at this thing.
We're into this thing. We're in the thick of it. We are a full-blown podcast. We've got ratings on Apple Podcasts. We've got followers, we got people tuning in. This is great. We are a fully functioning show.
Yeah, we can no longer make excuses about being new to all of this and not knowing what we're doing. So we actually have to like try and be nice and slick. But once again, if you guys didn't hear what I said right up front, that we've got an exclusive on update on this Michael Keaton story. We're into about 20 minutes, and it's new stuff. This is hold around for this one. I've never really broken anything on here before, so this would be the first time that I broke a story, which is kind of exciting. But before we get into that, we're going to dive into the information that we've already been talking about. First story on here. What are you going to do? First story on here. We're talking about the fact that multiple updates on The Flash. It's been long rumored to be a Flashpoint storyline. They kind of further confirmed that a few days back. And then we got even more information a couple days ago saying that Michael Keaton is in talks to return as Batman almost 30 years after he last played the role in Batman Returns, playing an older Bruce Wayne, which kind of says that this isn't just going to be a multiple time travel story, but also we are going multiverse with the DCEU.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, what is your initial take on them heading in this direction?
So if I'm just judging the information based off of this story and not what I know that we're going to get into a little bit later on, I honestly was not a big fan of this. You know, the Burton films are their own thing, and I feel like it's so far removed from, where the DCEU is right now. And it feels like they were trying to go back to that because they have no idea, like, how to integrate Batman into this, you know, modern universe. Because the Pattinson stuff, at least from my understanding and from, you know, the sources I've talked to and whatnot, the Pattinson stuff is going to be very standalone, kind of in the same vein as Joker, which is kind of what we expected. We knew it wasn't going to tie in to the DCEU at large and whatnot. So, and I'm cool with that. I like that. I like them not being hindered by that. But I, you know, going back into the Burtonverse to grab Michael Keaton, to bring him into a Flash movie for anything more than, I guess, a cameo feels a little weird to me. And it kind of, I don't know. It just feels like they're kind of unsure of where they want to go and whatnot, you know?
Right. That's kind of my initial reaction. Our frustration frequently with the DCEU, things that we've kind of discussed before, is that it seems like they go for weird before they kind of go for let's establish things. They get ahead right. of themselves. They're trying to go for the big shared universe before they establish the characters. And then let's do Flashpoint before we've done a Flash movie.
Yeah.
That feels like getting ahead of yourself. And then it's like when you bring back a Michael Keaton feels like stunt casting.
It absolutely. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the CW doing the Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Right.
It's just like, let's grab all the legacy actors and characters that we know and just throw them into a hodgepodge of a event, you know?
And that gets me worried when it feels like they're doing desperate things to get people's attention on a project. When it just feels like the Flash could stand on his own. This doesn't feel like we don't need to rush to Flashpoint. We don't need to put Michael Keaton in it for this to be an amazing movie, for people to be excited about the Flash, because this is one of these iconic characters that like keeps having, I mean, he has a second live action TV show. Yeah. The general public knows who the Flash is. People love the Flash. He just hasn't had his own movie, which is a weird thing. When think of all of the more obscure characters that are getting their own movies, we're doing a Harley Quinn Birds of Prey movie, all of this stuff that's happening, but we don't have a Flash movie. Like Guardians of the Galaxy is this big, gigantic Marvel property that's getting big franchise that everybody loves, but a character as beloved and longstanding as the Flash, we don't have a movie yet. And when they're doing the movie, it feels like they think they need to lean into gimmicks. Now, I'm as nostalgic for Batman 89 Michael Keaton as anyone, because that's the Batman of my childhood. I show this all the time. But right next to where I do all this, if you're on the audio version, I'm picking up a notebook that has my trading cards for Batman the movie. And I have the full set.
Yeah.
And then I also have the full set of Batman Returns cards. And it's right here next to my desk where I talk nerdy stuff for a living. This is my childhood of being a nerdy person. And so I'm as nostalgic as anyone for him. And there's all sorts of ideas that could get me excited. And perhaps with the story that you'll be discussing later on, it could sway me a little bit. But at face value, my first reaction was like, I don't understand what they're doing here.
It's a bit confusing. And I will say this to play devil's advocate. I think because of how ingrained in pop culture the Flash is, and because of how familiar we are with the character, granted from animated versions, TV versions and whatnot, I understand not needing to start with the origins of the character and like diving right in where Barry is like married to Iris and then maybe throwing in some Wally West and stuff like that. I get that. I think you can do that and make it work. And I think you can do a Flashpoint movie and make it interesting. But at the same time, it does feel like they're rushing to get to the meaty stories. But the problem is like in order to get to those meaty stories and in order for those stories to have the weight and significance that they do, we need to have seen this character evolve. And if this is the same Flash that was in Justice League, which I fail to believe that they're not going to recast Ezra Miller, that just kind of blows my mind. It hasn't happened already.
Right.
Then we haven't seen enough of him. We've only seen him become the Flash, you know, run around and push things and whatever his line in Justice League is. And we haven't spent enough time with him. Granted, you know, I'm sure they can do it. They can make it work. I have faith in Andy Muschietti. I actually quite enjoy him as a filmmaker, and it feels like they're doing some really interesting things, or he's going to try and do some interesting things with the Flash. But I don't know. I don't know, man. It's weird.
Yes, indeed. But with that said, if you weren't here at the beginning, Griffin has inside information about this project and this news. We're going to cover that in about 10, 15 minutes. So hold around if you want to hear something. And it's legitimately changes the perspective of the story entirely.
Absolutely.
We are basically giving our update on what we knew 2 days ago. Griffin has information from an actual insider that we'll share with you 10, 15 minutes. We have a couple super chats come in. Thank you so much. Random Movie Reviews. Hey, Sean, can you watch and review Avatar, The Last Airbender seasons and The Bad Movie 2 on Netflix? You can watch it with your kids and they can give your thoughts on it like on the Shrek video. It's tough to say because saying, hey, can you watch a movie in and of itself is asking for 2 hours of my time, which 2 hours of my time, like I'm a busy person with a lot of things to cover. And so saying, hey, can you watch four seasons of a TV show? That's a pretty big ask. That's not like a small thing like, hey, man, can you give me 30 hours of your time to talk about a TV show I'm passionate about? Maybe I can. Maybe I'll like it, but I've gotten a ton of requests since it's shown up on Netflix, so maybe I'll give it a try. But you know, that's a really big ask to like, hey, can you just check this out? Well, I can check out a few episodes easy. Watching four seasons is pretty tough. Another one came in, guy at the movies, Griff without the tank top, must not be feeling well. It's the opposite. He had an interview right before this.
Yeah,
so
actually, I'm actually feeling really well.
Yeah, he's had a good day already, and the day is just beginning. Another one came in, Robert Clemente. Hey, Sean, my local theater in Georgia has already reopened. Decided to check it out. The movie lineup was Jaws, Aquaman, Indiana Jones, and more classics. Very cool. Actually, it's a little update on what we talked about last week about how much interest there is from people. I put out a poll on my community tab last week, and I asked people if they go back to the theaters. And just trying to get the perspective, like how many people will go back when this happens? Now, granted, my audience is movie fans. These are people that go to the movies a lot. So it's not the general public. And I think that changes things a good bit. But the results from my poll, let me pull this up real quick, see if this works, is that basically 6% said they're not going until there's a vaccine. 6% said they're going to wait a few months. 6% said they're going to wait a few weeks. And then 82% were in the category of I'm going as soon as there's a movie I want to see, or I'm going as soon as theaters open. So that's a lot of people. That is a lot of people that are looking to go back to the movies as soon as they can, which is interesting. Like, I don't know if that's just because it's such a my type of audience that they watch movies. And so they are the people that are absolutely going to rush out there. But like, if you look at film Twitter and even some of the conversations I've had with people, it sounds like people are a lot more afraid of theaters than that poll would indicate. So it's once again, only getting extreme perspectives on stuff. But I thought that was interesting, just what high of a percentage of people were looking to head back as soon as there's something that they want to see. Anything interesting about that to you, Griffin?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of speaks to the age of your primary demographic. You have a lot of younger viewers, so
right.
Like, I think that tracks. I don't know. The more I kind of hear about what's going on, I'm less inclined to want to go to the theaters. I think the only thing that's going to get me in a theater would be a press screening of Tenet. I'm not going to go see it with a bunch of people. I just don't, and especially the way AMC and the other theater chains kind of handled that situation, I don't really trust them anymore to enforce things. I mean, someone made the joke on Twitter, but it's like, I mean, AMC doesn't even enforce, you know, people with taking their cell phones out. So it's like, how do you expect them to enforce, you know, people wearing masks and whatnot? And it's just, you know, and they're going to eat in the theater, like that doesn't, theaters just can't operate the way that they used to in the current state of the pandemic right now. And we've already seen like spikes in hubs like LA because of the way they've started reopening and whatnot. And so I just, I used to be on the train where it's like, okay, well, I'll go see Tenet in the theaters, but now I'm leaning more towards, it just feels like a petri dish if I go there.
So I'm paying close attention to see what things are like here. If I was in New York, if I was in LA, I think it makes it a lot more complicated because you know you are in a danger zone with a lot of congested people.
Yeah.
The theater I normally go to, it's pretty empty. normally. So I feel a little bit safer for that reason, but we'll see what happens. A random movie guy says, speaking of Batman, rest in peace, Joel Schumacher. We'll have a whole segment on him, actually, in just a little bit. We'll talk about him. And we had one more super chat come in, and we'll actually had a couple more. People are real chatty today. Had a couple more come in, and then we'll dive into discussing Green Lantern apparently appearing in Justice League. Just an email with super chat. Thanks so much. Have you ever wanted to get your card collection appraised? Nope. I mean, I've had mild thoughts. I have a lot more collector's items. Growing up, my mom would take us to kind of collector's shows and stuff. And so I have like a couple tubs of unopened Star Trek and Hook toys, like for the movie Hook. Wow. I have unopened Hook toys. And I've thought about kind of getting some of that appraised or doing something like that. But, you know, when you hold on to something for 30 years, it means a lot more to you than it does to anyone else. These cards, I don't care how much they're worth because I'm not going to get rid of them. That like this is part of my story. And especially in my case, I talk about this stuff full time for a living, my nerd passion for nerdy stuff. And like legitimately today we are talking about Michael Keaton. He's right there in these cards. So I they're not something I would ever get rid of. So it's not something that I would be likely to get appraised for that reason. That like Hook toys I don't have connections to, but they're just in a tub in my garage. Deal Scott, Griff's great hair game. Sean with that hat. Yep. Yeah, I didn't do an interview this morning, so I didn't need to get all fancy.
Listen, a lot of things can change when you get a haircut, including your hair game.
So. That is very, very, very true. All right, moving along to our next subject of the day. Put this one kind of in the rumor reports discussion. This is not confirmed by any stretch of the imagination, but Grace Randolph put out a tweet saying, I've now heard it from a second source. It seems word is indeed getting out. So I can confirm that in the Snyder Cut cameo I've been teasing is indeed Ryan Reynolds for Green Lantern. I'm hearing WB is working on putting the deal together now to make it official. So essentially, Grace Randolph.
Let me just take a look at where this is posted.
Yeah, so the article I pulled up is from, we've got this covered. Side note. Never trust them as a source. I'm reading this because this is where her tweet is listed. So I'm reading her actual tweet. I trust her more than I trust them. Question, like, you know, she's had her moments where she said some things that didn't pan out, but she's also had things she said that were true. So I'm putting this up here as this is just the place hosting her tweet. That's just the place I just did a quick search, and it gave me an opportunity to tell you, never trust we've got this covered. If you're on Facebook, if you're anywhere that someone's like, hey, look, it's confirmed that Amber Heard is actually going to be the new Batwoman on Batwoman. No, that we've got this covered is not a reliable source. They just dwell in garbage. On this particular case, they are linking to the original person that said this, and that's what I'm linking to here. So there's a couple things to think about on this one. Do I believe it's true, and do I want Ryan Reynolds to show up in linking his Green Lantern movie to the Snyder Cut? It seems like a pretty weird thing to do, just in general.
Why? Just doesn't even make sense. Like the Snyderverse is so far removed from any of that stuff. It is like legitimately its own entity, and the only way I could see them bringing in Ryan Reynolds is if it's like making a joke or something, and that feels tonally off from Zack Snyder's movies. So
and I think the other thing to it is that the original concept that David Goyer pitched to Christopher Nolan, that Zack Snyder went, let's run with this and make Man of Steel, was it would be the biggest thing in the world if Superman suddenly showed up. If aliens were suddenly real and one of them has been among us and he's stopping an alien invasion, that would be the biggest news ever. So if you suddenly say, I mean, yeah, but 2 years before that, I mean, down the road, a big poo cloud showed up in Green Lantern. Like, it undermines the entire premise of Man of Steel.
Yeah.
The entire premise of the DCU existing was this. That was the idea that was interesting to Nolan that got the whole thing to happen. So then having like, now let's retcon it to say that Green Lantern actually happened right before all of this and was very like, that's very public because some of these other things like Wonder Woman was a battle before social media. No, Green Lantern 2 years before Man of Steel. That doesn't work. That does not work.
Especially when it was just like as bad and as like
poorly received.
Poorly received as it was. Yeah.
So on that level, I just don't think it makes sense. And then you see Deadpool 2. one of the jokes in Deadpool 2, I mean, one of the jokes in Deadpool 1 is him making fun of the costume, like, oh, man, that was embarrassing. Deadpool 2 is him shooting himself in the head using time travel so that he wouldn't make the movie. So he seems to both have a sense of humor about it, but also be like, yeah, that was bad. He's not looking to continue that. So it's tough for me to see it as, I don't know. It feels like a pretty big stretch for that reason to me. It feels like fanboy wish list kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm skeptical for that reason. Would I want it to be true? I don't think so. Because I just don't see the benefit of retconning Green Lantern into this particular universe. If you're joining in a little bit late, we're going to do one more little show. We're going to talk about Joel Schumacher, and then we've got an exclusive talking about the Flash movie, some inside information that Griffin has from an actual source. And so we'll talk about that in probably about five-ish minutes. But before that, we do that, I just wanted to pause and talk about Joel Schumacher real quick. So he passed away at the age of 80. So I wouldn't call that, you know, I don't normally consider those tragic deaths. Someone that has a very full life, did some very accomplished things, and then lived to be above the, to be 80. I don't think of that normally as a tragedy, but it's sad anytime that someone dies, of course. And I think one of the great tragedies I think of Joel Schumacher's life is that his Batman movies are just so part of popular culture on the negative side of it, that it overshadows the fact that he really had a great set of films that he made. Very diverse set of films. Like, yeah. Like I was looking at it, I was like, oh, I forgot he did the Mr. T movie, DC Cab. And like, you just go through it. And I mean, it's crime dramas, it's vampire movies, it's campy Batman movies. Like he did all kinds of different films. And the many of them, some of them are great, many of them very good. And then he had a couple that didn't work. And then of course his Batman movies, the choices were infamously bad. And not well received, and aged even worse than they were received when they first kind of came out. And so because of that, I think people, there are way too many people on Twitter. I don't remember. I don't know, maybe you retweeted or something. Was it IO9 or something like that?
Yeah. What the heck was that all about? Like,
yeah, they tweeted out, the guy that brought us bat nipples has died.
Like, what the, that's so, it's, one, it's just incredibly disrespectful. It doesn't matter who it is, what films they've done. You don't, clearly they're just in it for clicks, and they have no, they could care less about, you know, Schumacher and his legacy and whatnot. Because I agree with you. It's like, everyone focuses on Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. This guy did The Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Flatliners was a major cult hit.
I was a John Grisham person back in the 90s. Whenever my family would do car trips, we'd listen to the John Grisham novels. And then, yeah, you know, The Client, A Time to Kill. Yeah, we checked those ones out. I mean, they were huge in the 90s. I loved all those movies. And those are like some of those films that, for me, got me into adult serious dramas, not just movies with guys in rubber suits punching each other in the face.
Yeah. I mean, Schumacher's vision of Batman was clearly his own, and I think it just they're very like queer positive films. Like it for a lot of people, it really showed what like someone in his position can do with like this material, and like be a little bit more inclusive and whatnot. And then also, like, I don't know about you, but I absolutely adore and love his version of Phantom of the Opera, even with Gerard Butler singing. I still think it's a really enjoyable film.
And that's one of the ones I forgot about, because you just don't associate him with musicals. And so when I looked at it, I was like, oh, yeah, he did Phantom of the Opera. Like, this is a guy that has done so many different things. But just because Batman is such a cultural icon and such a powerhouse, that's all that so many people remember him for. And that's really frustrating when people can't get past the fact that he did he did a bad job with Batman, or I don't even like to think of it that he did a bad job. I think he delivered the movies he wanted to make.
He also delivered the movies that Warner Brothers wanted. Mm-hmm. They wanted to sell toys,
right?
And he made movies to sell toys. Like, it's very clear what they were aiming for, regardless of the quality of those films.
Exactly. I mean, it's well known that coming out of Batman Returns, McDonald's was pissed off because they couldn't sell penguin, you know, politician toys and stuff like that. And so they wanted more toys. They wanted to go in that direction. And, you know, okay, absolutely, it's weird to put nipples on the Batsuit. It's weird to do so, like, close-up shots of, like, butts and stuff like that for the suit. I'm saying, absolutely, that's all weird. But, like, he delivered this weird pun-heavy movie that he wanted to make. No one else really wanted that movie besides Warner Brothers at first. And also, Batman Forever was pretty well received. That was like, people didn't get weirded out by that one, even though that one has the puns. It has all of the bat nipples and everything. It's just Batman and Robin where they went too far down that path and went, wait, bat ice skates, bat credit card. Wait a minute. I think we've lost our way here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like people said, like, Sean, you said this was one of the worst movies of all time. I was like, I don't think I've ever said that. I think it's one of the most misguided blockbusters of all time, but...
I mean, honestly, you can look at, I don't know, I think it's really easy to poo-poo on those movies, but I think when you kind of rewatch it and you see what they were going for, they're not, I mean, they're enjoyable, and I don't know, I mean, I appreciate the bold ambition. I mean, it defined the aesthetic of Batman right. for, you know, a generation along with Tim Burton. And I think it works in tandem with them. It does certain things well. I mean, I'll say it. I'm a defender of Val Kilmer as Batman and Bruce Wayne. I think that's a great piece of casting. And I thought he did a solid job in the film. And like, even Jim Carrey, for all his antics, is like really entertaining to watch in Batman Forever. So like, I don't know. It's ridiculous that people are really harping on his legacy with those films. I mean,
right.
Another one he did, St. Elmo's Fire. I mean, that is
Totally forget. You don't you don't associate him with it.
It's ridiculous. I mean, the guy puts some respect on the guy's name. He's an icon for a reason.
So if you're kind of one of my younger fans or even older fan, I would recommend go check out what his filmography is today. This is what I actually tweeted out. Go look at his filmography and you'll be just shocked at the number of movies that he directed that you didn't know he directed or you forgot he directed. And go check out some of his other stuff. Cause it's weird because it's not like even he's known for a campy style. Like you look at the stuff he did right around Batman and Robin, A Time to Kill is not remotely campy. It's about racism. It's very timely for today in many ways. Like he did all these movies that are very serious. His Batman take just happened to be heavily inspired by Batman 66. And so yeah, absolutely go check out his filmography. All right. With that said, I'm going to do something we've actually never done on the Sean Chandler podcast before. We've got a breaking story that to kind of give a preface some of this stuff. I live in Central Texas. I walk my kids to school right over there. I have no sources. I don't know anybody. And so I'm not normally in the scoop breaking game. Griffin, however, is in LA and knows some people. And, you know, earlier today was talking to Dan Stevens on the phone and was talking to Kenneth Branagh a couple weeks. Like, he knows people. His connections through some of his stuff.
I'm not that important, guys. He's being very generous and kind.
He has actual connections, knows people that knows things. And so he recently heard some information about The Flash, about Michael Keaton, that is very relevant to stories that are very loudly being proclaimed out recently. It's a huge update that changes your perspective on the story. To be clear on this, this is coming from an actual source, someone that he's spoken to.
Yeah.
But it's from one source. It's not confirmed by a second source. To give perspective, this isn't rumor mill. This wasn't he got on Reddit and read something. This is a person that he knows. And this is a person that would know things. He's told me who it is. And this person would know stuff. So, Griffin, with that preface on this, if you could go ahead and tell us your scoop on The Flash and Michael Keaton.
Yeah. So, I mean, like with anytime someone mentions information like this, you got to preface it by saying, like, look, this is only coming to me from one source. You know, the way the industry works, things could change. This could be the state of it, you know, this week. And then next week they'd say, you know what? We don't really want to go this direction. So like, take all of this, you know, just think about it, contemplate on it. You know, they're trying to work to make it happen, but it doesn't mean it will happen. Just so you all know, this is the source that revealed to me the third act of Wonder Woman like a year before the film came out. So I knew all about Ares, David Thewlis's turn as Ares and whatnot before that was even going to happen in the film. So it's like, I trust this person, immensely. So basically, what they told me was that the Keaton stuff is 100% true. It's 100% in the works, which I don't think any of us are really doubting. But it's nice to get that, you know, confirmation from someone that, you know, actually knows about it. His role in Flashpoint is just going to be a cameo. It's not going to be anything substantial, which really put me at ease, because one of my big, you know, things was that, okay, are they going to make Keaton Thomas Wayne, or is this going to be like Burton versus Batman? And it's 100% Burton versus Batman, which I think that sort of also sort of came out over the coming days, was that no, he's not going to be Thomas Wayne. It's not going to be stunt casting like this. He's actually going to be the Batman from 89 and Returns. I don't have any information on whether or not Jeffrey Dean Morgan is actually going to be in the film, or if they've talked to him or whatnot. But I have that. So cameo in Flashpoint, kind of planting the seeds for what the next pieces of information are going to be, which is really the juicy stuff. So after Flashpoint, after they've kind of, like, you know, reestablished Keaton in this universe, in 2023, they're looking to do Batman Beyond and have Keaton be, obviously, old Bruce Wayne, mentoring either Terry McGinnis, or, I mean, I've even heard, this is not coming from this source, but I've even heard that maybe they're looking at bringing in, like, Batgirl and stuff like that. I don't know. I'm assuming they're going to go with a Terry McGinnis if they're going to do Batman Beyond, but that's what they're looking, that's why they're planting the seeds of Keaton in Flashpoint. And then the really interesting thing, and when you think about it, this, it makes sense, and it gets me super excited, but basically that the Keaton deal is 80% done, and he had one request, and I'm getting the feeling that this whole deal is sort of hindering on this request, which is he wants Burton, Tim Burton, to come back and direct the Batman Beyond film. And hearing that, it might seem like, oh, Warner Brothers is going back to the well to grab someone, you know, who's done like the first two Batman movies and just bring him back in. But if you think about it, Burton, you know, he introduced Batman to the world. He really captured the style. He's got a very gothic sense of filmmaking mixed with those punk elements.
Yeah.
And so when you look at what Batman Beyond is and how much filmmaking has evolved.
We should define that real quick.
Yeah.
So if you don't know, Batman Beyond was an animated show from about 20 years ago set in the Batman the Animated Series universe with basically a 90-year-old Batman who's been retired a long time. And then someone stumbles across basically him and the Batsuit and becomes this Batman of the future, Terry McGinnis. Yeah. And so it's basically old Bruce Wayne is the mentor to this new Batman.
Right. And so that's sort of what they're looking at. So Batman Beyond is very much in their mind right now. And truthfully, I think it makes sense in the way that I'm sort of interpreting it is that it's, and this is not coming from the source or what I think, this is sort of just me kind of piecing things together. It'll sort of be like what they did with Ant-Man. So Scott Lang became Ant-Man, but Hank Pym and his legacy and the adventures he went on are still very much in the consciousness of those films. And so we already have two Burton Batman films, and I'm assuming that he went on more adventures since then. So you take that into account and you incorporate it into a Batman Beyond movie. You have Terry McGinnis or whoever be the new Batman, and you work them into Justice League, just like you worked in Scott Lang into the Avengers and whatnot. Granted, that's just sort of my interpretation of it. I don't know how far stylistically they're going to go with Batman Beyond and all stuff like that, but the concept of Batman Beyond is very much on the forefront of their minds, and bringing back Burton is sort of like it's kind of like the deal sort of depends on that, whether or not Keaton really wants to come back for this. And I think it makes sense. You know, Keaton wants to reteam with the Master to explore a character that's significantly evolved since the last time we saw him. And we're not counting, you know, the Nolan stuff, the Schumacher stuff. Since the last time we saw Keaton as Batman in Batman Returns, a lot has happened, and I think the two of them reteaming to explore the legacy of this character and how he can act as a mentor figure going forward, that's exciting to me. And I think Michael Keaton as an aging Bruce Wayne also is very, very exciting as well. So this is the stuff that I have. Granted, it's not 100% confirmed, obviously, but it's coming to me from a source that I trust. And again, revealed to me the third act of Wonder Woman a year in advance. So I don't know. That's sort of where I'm going with that.
And to what we said before, we were discussing this story, and it definitely reshapes the entire interpretation of the previous announcement. Previous announcement being like, okay, that feels like stunt casting. Where are they going with this? And you go, oh, if this is like, they really are going full multiverse, this is set tied to something in the past, like it's really going somewhere, I think it reshapes the, it gets a lot more interesting. Feels less stunt casty and feels more like...
It feels like they have a plan.
Yes.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. I'm really curious to see if they're going to get Burton back. Like, the only thing that makes me a little trepid about this is that Burton has not had a really solid hit I don't even know how long, in years. I'll say since Frankenweenie. I think Frankenweenie was like the last really solid film that he did. So that gets me a little concerned. But if he's going back into a universe and exploring a character that he's already really familiar with and whatnot, that I could see it working. So I don't know. And again, his style just fits perfectly with Batman Beyond. I think we have to kind of eliminate the fact that it's going to be a direct translation of the animated series.
Batman
Beyond takes place like 20 years after Bruce Wayne is finished being Batman. And it's really cyberpunk. It's like Batman in a Blade Runner universe. I don't think we can expect that, but the thematics and the the stories and basically the core of that movie, the heart of that series, I think is what we can probably expect from a Batman Beyond adaptation.
Yeah. So once again, to very clearly repeat this is not confirmed this is, he has a real source that knows actual things that are going on behind the scenes. It hasn't been confirmed by a second person, but the person that told him this is someone that told him the end of Wonder Woman a year before the movie came out. So this is someone that knows things, someone that does have a high position that would be privy to this information. And so this is something that is in the works behind the scenes that could potentially happen. Yeah. And so first time we've ever had kind of one of these original exclusive stories, a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm very nervous just putting myself out there. So, but it was, I don't know. I talked with them and I was like, is this okay? And they're just like, yeah, go for it.
that was my fear too. I was like, I don't know how this stuff works. I want to get myself in trouble.
I start getting emails from Warner Brothers and they're just like, you're on our shit list now. And I'm like, okay. I mean, especially because it's not a done deal. So they probably don't want this stuff getting out there. But anyways.
So let's see what comes of that in the end. Moving along to our next story on here. It's been rumored for about a month, or it's been known for about a month, that YouTube has been looking to sell or pass along Cobra Kai to another network. They've been like this original creator for a few years now. It hasn't really worked for them. And so the one thing that really did kind of stand out amongst the originals was Cobra Kai. And it now appears to be official that Netflix is the one that has picked up Cobra Kai and will be putting out the old episodes, and then shortly afterwards putting out season 3 for people to check out. So I really enjoyed seasons 1 and 2 of Cobra Kai. I don't think YouTube is probably the best place to do originals like that. So I think this is only a positive. More people will be able to see it, and they'll probably have a bigger budget. So I think it only lends itself to being good for everything. Have you watched Cobra Kai? Any thoughts on this one?
No, I haven't. And, part of the reason is probably because I don't have much of a connection or relationship with, like, the Karate Kid films. So, I don't know. I just was never really interested in it. But I heard, like, amazing things. And it seems like, the logical place for it to go. Netflix. I mean, granted. Like, I was really shocked that this was, like, a YouTube original show to begin with. I was like, this this is like too good for them. They don't know what they're doing with this. And so in the hands of Netflix, I think it's a safer bet.
I think that's what all of us thought when we started watching. It was like, oh man, I'm going to watch this. This is going to be hilariously bad. What a stupid idea for a show. Like, oh, this weirdly works. I don't understand why this show works so well, especially as a YouTube original. So that was, it was a pleasant surprise, both that YouTube could do something good and the fact that, that I enjoyed it as much as I did for both of its seasons. And so now it heading to Netflix, I think that's positive all around. I had a super chat come in from Tommy. J.D. Morgan as Flashpoint Batman and Lauren Cohen as Joker, thoughts? So if you don't know what he's referring to here in Flashpoint, Flashpoint is the storyline that they're looking to do for the Flash movie. And in the basically Barry Allen goes back in time, stops his mother from being killed, and it just breaks the whole timeline, basically. So one of those changes that happens in the timeline is that instead of Thomas and Martha Wayne getting killed, Bruce is the one that gets killed. Yeah. And because of this, his parents snap and Thomas Wayne becomes Batman, but he's like a very angry alcoholic serial killer. He's like the Punisher as Batman. I mean, if you thought that Batfleck was intense, let's take that to the next level. And then Martha Wayne becomes Joker. And the specific, why is he asking about J.D. Morgan and Lauren Cohen? That's because in the Batman v Superman, in the intro, when they're showing the backstory, it's Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Thomas Wayne. Like that, those are the people that were cast. And so they're only in the movie for 30 seconds or something like that. But Zack Snyder cast people that if they did more with that plot line, you could put them in the movie. So that's the backstory on the question. I think Jeffrey Dean Morgan would be fantastic if they went in the Thomas Wayne Batman direction. I think he absolutely could pull off the crazy in that while being someone that could be sympathetic. The question is, do I want them to do that degree of Flashpoint so early on? That's always the big fear of like, man, it's just going so deep into the mythology and let's do alternate universe before we do regular universe. Mm-hmm. So that's where I get nervous on it. But I mean, in general, like, do I want them to do a Flashpoint with Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Thomas Wayne Batman? Yes. Do I want that 2 years from now or a year from now or whatever? No, I want it a little bit further down the line. I want them to establish the Flash first. But the idea of them doing that storyline, I think, is great.
Yeah, right. I guess it really just depends on how much they want to distance themselves from the Snyder stuff, or if they even want to bother doing Thomas Wayne in the Flashpoint movie and whatnot. So, I don't know. I mean, again, I'd love to see Jeffrey Dean Morgan, if they're going to go Thomas Wayne. Yeah, I'd love to see him play Thomas Wayne as Batman. And I guess, Lauren Cohen as Joker would make sense. Do I want to see this as the first Flash movie? No, I want the emphasis to be on Flash in the first Flash movie. But I'm okay with, like, us, you know, I guess seeing a movie with a middle-aged Flash who's a little bit more established and whatnot. Like, I'm okay with that. So,
yeah. All right, moving along to our final kind of story of the day. We've got an update on the next M. Night Shyamalan movie. Obviously, with his stuff, there's always tons of secrecy. But we do know the release date and a few cast members. Looks like it's coming out. Where was that? I think it's July 23rd, 2021. So a year and a month from now, we got a new movie and just told us a few people cast in it, but no kind of big headlining names that big and flashy. You have any thoughts, particular thoughts on M. Night's new movie finally having a release date or having a release date? I don't know what about finally.
Yeah,
since it's not like right. Finally a new release date.
I've been just dying for the new M. Night Shyamalan movie. Sure. I don't really care. I'm just kind of like, if he ends up doing a good movie, then great. And I'm happy for him. I'm glad he'll like wind up on top, or maybe he'll wind up on top again or something. I don't know. Glass left such a sour taste in my mouth that I'm just kind of done with M. Night right now. I appreciate its ambition, but it just was not a good movie, in my opinion. And so, I don't know. I mean, I haven't watched his Apple show that he produced called Servant. So, I mean, maybe he's gotten better from there. I've heard good things about Servant. But I know nothing about the plot other than, like, it's a Shyamalan film, so you can expect twists and whatnot. So, cool. I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling. He's one of these directors and writers that has such a bizarre track record.
Yeah.
Of like, that was amazing. That was unbelievably awful. And everything in between. That was almost a good movie. And then you botched the ending so badly that the whole thing is bad. I mean, just so many different vibes that you can have towards his movies. And, but this string of movies he's been putting out with the Blumhouse model, he's produced all these movies for under $50 million. Three different movies. His last three movies made for under all of them combined is under $50 million. They've made over $600 million. So it's the Blumhouse model is absolutely working for him. So some people in the chat are asking, like, what? After he ruined Glass, why are they still letting him work? Because he prints money for them.
He's still M. Night Shyamalan. Like, you know, there is still a draw there. The draw is, is it going to be one of the worst movies I've ever seen, or is it actually going to be a really great, you know, thriller with a twist? Like, there's still an appeal.
Right, right. And they're always, even if they're awful, almost all of them are interesting. I think that the Will Smith one is the only one that I don't think is interesting. Because The Last Airbender, it's terrible, but that's almost what makes it so interesting. Like, how did he make a movie that's this bad and so incoherent? Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. A boring Will Smith vehicle for his son. That's not very interesting. Everything else, even when it's awful, it's interesting. Like, there's a lot to talk about with Glass of, like, what was he thinking? And you're talking about it because he went for crazy and.
Yeah, it was. I still don't believe that he had like a 20-year roadmap for that movie. I refuse to believe that. But the other one is like Lady in the Water. I absolutely despise that movie and think it's one of the most pretentious pieces of crap I've ever seen. But, like, I mean, I appreciate the ambition. Like, he went there, he tried to tell, like, a fairy tale for his kids. And, like, it's, I can honestly say I've never seen another movie like it. So, I mean, there's that. It's just, it's not good. That's the only thing. It's like, do you appreciate his ambition even if the end result is trash?
Yeah, that's, I always try and factor ambition into it, how I take things, but it doesn't mean it overcomes bad. Like Glass, he was trying to subvert our expectations of what a superhero movie will be. So I can appreciate that he was trying to do something different and not just give the easy, obvious answer. Okay, doesn't change the fact that going in the total opposite direction of what you do with your unbreakable hero is still wildly offensive. So, yeah, there's a lot of things like that that try and, I don't know, that's what makes him interesting. He very rarely fumbles doing something obvious.
Yeah.
It's doing
true.
Something yeah. bananas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or something outside the box that's just such a dismal failure that you're going, how did he get so incompetent? Like, I don't understand how you go from something as meticulously crafted as The Sixth Sense to fumbling such obvious things in The Last Airbender. I don't get it.
I don't know. I don't get it either.
So with that, that is the last of our main subjects of the day. Griffin, what have you been watching recently? Anything you want to recommend to people?
Well, I checked out Eurovision, and my review for that is already up on the FilmSpeak channel if you want to go check that out. And that was a very interesting experience. I don't know. It was one of those things where it's like, it's kind of at odds with itself. It's like half an endearing love letter to the Eurovision contest, and it's like it's almost like a feel-good sports movie, and then the other half is like a Will Ferrell slapstick comedy, and the two never really like mesh together. And the weird thing I found out about it was like this was a passion project for Will Ferrell for years, like ever since he went to his wife in Sweden's house and visited their family, and they had Eurovision on the TV. And they were like watching it and going crazy over it. He's like, why hasn't this been made into a movie? I love this. I want to make it into a movie. And so he eventually made it into a movie. And weirdly enough, I feel like had he removed himself from like the performance standpoint, because he co-wrote the script, and I think the script is fine. But you know, if he had removed himself from a performance standpoint, I think the movie would have been a lot better. But it's I don't know. I've certainly never seen anything like it. So that's something. it's really interesting.
I saw My Spy a couple days ago, but they gave me a full embargo that I'm not supposed to say anything until tomorrow, which I thought was weird because the movie's been released internationally for months.
No, that's ridiculous. There are already reviews out there for it. Like,
when I tweeted out that I was about to watch it, and then when I posted up my schedule for the week, there was like people in the comments like, "I watched this back in February."
I know. Like,
Why is that amusing to you? It's being released now for me. But I can't tell you what I thought about this highly original Dave Bautista movie where he's a spy that has to watch a kid, which is a new concept.
Yeah, I feel like I'd probably rather go watch the Jackie Chan movie, The Spy Next Door, only because it has Jackie Chan in it. So at least there's that. Yeah, outside of Eurovision, I mean, I watched this movie called The Rental, which was Dave Franco's directorial debut, which made me never want to stay in an Airbnb ever again. So there's that.
Nice.
yeah, right. It's actually a nice little thriller. I'm trying to think if I watched anything else. Batman Returns. I was just talking to you before the show started. Yeah. I was watching Batman Returns last night. So, yeah, sorry, my phone keeps going off and it's annoying. Can you still hear me right now?
I can hear you.
Okay, cool. I just muted my computer audio. So, so Batman, going back into Burton and seeing Batman Returns, I don't know. I've always been really off put by that film, but like, I don't know. I guess I was in the right mindset to accept it this time around. Yeah. So I was like, I don't hate this.
Right. Well, there's no shortage of like very dark plot lines in that one. When you have Pee Wee Herman grabbing a baby and throwing him in a river in the first 2 minutes, we're going for it. And then the last 10 minutes is the Joker grabbing all the firstborns in Gotham and trying to throw them into a river. Like, whoa, like Burton, you really went for it on this one.
Jeez, I guess it's a mean-spirited kind of movie, but it's also like a really interesting look at just like trauma. And I mean, I've read it, so, you know, every time I watch that movie, I kind of like dig up on it and see how people are accepting it. And like one of the things that I've always really liked is how like the Penguin and Catwoman are like mirror images of like Batman's biggest, like of his trauma, I guess, or like his biggest issue. So I don't know. It's, if you haven't seen it in a while, give it a rewatch, because it's you have to be in the right mindset to accept it.
Max Schreck is an evil Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. He's dealing with like the polar opposite, the contrasting versions of himself. So it's a really smartly made film, and it's just pure Tim Burton. So
yes. So thank you so much for joining me and giving us our first ever scloop here. Scloop. Our first ever scloop.
Our
first
sloop.
Anyone has first ever had one of those. But our first scoop as well with the Michael Keaton store. Thank you so much for that. Where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can give me a follow on Twitter at Griff Schiller, and you can head on over to the Film Speak channel for more, reviews, podcasts, interviews. I should have the Dan Stevens one up at some point next week or whatnot. But thanks for letting me, drop this on here. I from everything that I've heard, it seems legit. I trust the source. And so, I mean, but granted, this is the film industry. It fluctuates a lot. So a lot could happen and this could change. But the notion, the idea that they're thinking of it is really exciting.
Right.
So.
So that'll do it for today's podcast. If you're listening on the audio version, be sure to leave a review and a score. We record these lives most every Wednesday right around 11 o'clock Central AM on my YouTube channel. Thank you so much for watching or listening, and keep talking movies too much.